Chapter 21. Gynecologic Emergencies. Introduction. The most obvious difference between men and women is that women are uniquely designed to conceive and give birth. This difference makes women susceptible to a number of problems that do not occur in men. This chapter examines a few of those problems. Female anatomy is discussed first, followed by problems that may be encountered in the pre-hospital setting. Vaginal bleeding is briefly discussed. The principles of managing a woman who has been the victim of sexual assault are also addressed. Anatomy and physiology. The ovaries are the primary female reproductive organ. The ovaries are located on each side of the lower abdomen and produce an ovum, or egg, that, if fertilized, will develop into a fetus. Each ovary produces an ovum in alternating months and releases it into the fallopian tube. Some women experience a minor cramping pain when the ovum is released at ovulation. The fallopian tubes connect each ovary with the uterus and are the primary location for fertilization of the ovum. The uterus is the muscular organ where the fetus grows during pregnancy. As the ovum moves slowly down the fallopian tube, sperm moving up the tube can surround it, and one sperm fertilizes it. When an ovum is fertilized in the fallopian tube, the developing embryo travels into the uterus, where the lining of the walls of the uterus have become engorged with blood in anticipation of receiving a fertilized ovum. Here, the embryo attaches to the uterine wall and continues to grow. The narrowest portion of the uterus, the cervix, opens into the vagina. The vagina is the outermost cavity of a woman's reproductive system and forms the lower part of the birth canal. In the vagina, sperm is deposited from the male penis. From here, the sperm pass through the cervix into the uterus and eventually up the fallopian tubes. If the ovum is not fertilized in the fallopian tube, it continues to travel into the uterus. Because fertilization has not occurred within about 14 days of ovulation, the lining of the uterus begins to separate and menstruation occurs. The menstrual flow consists of blood from the separated lining of the uterus and lasts about 1 week. The process of ovulation and menstruation is controlled by female hormones, primarily produced in the ovaries. The external female genitalia consists of the vaginal opening just posterior to the urethral opening. The labia majora and labia minora are folds of tissue that surround the urethral and vaginal openings. At the anterior end of the labia is the clitoris, and at the posterior end is the anus. The perineum is the area of skin between the vagina and the anus. The labia are extremely vascular and can be injured, but because of their location, they seldom are, except in cases of sexual abuse. When a female reaches puberty, she begins to ovulate and experience menstruation. The onset of menstruation is called menarche and usually occurs between the ages of 11 and 16 years, although it can occur earlier or later. Any female who has reached menarche is capable of becoming pregnant. Women continue to experience the cycle of ovulation and menstruation until they reach menopause, at which time the cycle ceases. Women reach menopause at widely varying ages, but it commonly occurs by around the age of 50 years. Pathophysiology. The causes of gynecologic emergencies are varied and range from sexually transmitted diseases to trauma. Pelvic inflammatory disease. Pelvic inflammatory disease, PID, is an infection of the female upper organs of reproduction, specifically the uterus, ovaries, and fallopian tubes, that occurs almost exclusively in sexually active women. Disease-causing organisms enter the vagina, generally by the process of sexual activity, and migrate through the opening of the cervix and into the uterine cavity. The infection may then expand to the fallopian tubes, producing scarring that can lead to life-threatening ectopic pregnancy or sterility, eventually involving the ovaries, leading to the development of a life-threatening abscess. Ectopic pregnancy is a pregnancy that develops outside the uterus, most often in the fallopian tube. Although PID itself is seldom a threat to life, its ultimate consequences of an ectopic pregnancy or an abscess can be lethal. The most common presenting sign of PID is generalized lower abdominal pain. Other signs and symptoms include an abnormal and often foul-smelling vaginal discharge, increased pain with intercourse, fever, general malaise, and nausea and vomiting. Sexually transmitted diseases. Sexually transmitted diseases can lead to more serious conditions such as PID. For example, untreated gonorrhea and chlamydia often progress to PID. Chlamydia is caused by the bacterium Chlamydia trachomatis. It is a common sexually transmitted disease, affecting an estimated 2.8 million Americans each year. Although the symptoms of chlamydia are usually mild or absent, some women may have symptoms including lower abdominal pain, low back pain, nausea, fever, pain during intercourse, and/or bleeding between menstrual periods. Chlamydial infection of the cervix can spread to the rectum, leading to rectal pain, discharge, or bleeding. Left untreated, the disease can progress to PID. In rare cases, chlamydia causes arthritis that may be accompanied by skin lesions and inflammation of the eye and urethra. Bacterial vaginosis is one of the most common conditions to afflict women. In this infection, normal bacteria in the vagina are replaced by an overgrowth of other bacterial forms. Symptoms may include itching, burning, or pain, and may be accompanied by a fishy, foul-smelling discharge. Left untreated, bacterial vaginosis can lead to premature birth or low birth weight in case of pregnancy, make the patient more susceptible to more serious infections, and result in PID. Gonorrhea is caused by Neisseria gonorrhea, a bacterium that can grow and multiply rapidly in the warm, moist areas of the reproductive tract, including the cervix, uterus, and fallopian tubes in women, and in the urethra in women and men. The bacterium can also grow in the mouth, throat, eyes, and anus. Symptoms, which are generally more severe in men than in women, appear approximately 2 to 10 days after exposure. Women may be infected with gonorrhea for months, but experience virtually no symptoms until the infection has spread to other parts of the reproductive system. When symptoms do appear in women, they generally manifest as painful urination, with associated burning or itching, a yellowish or bloody vaginal discharge, usually with a foul odor, and blood associated with vaginal intercourse. More severe infections may present with cramping and abdominal pain, nausea and vomiting, and bleeding between periods. These symptoms indicate that the infection has progressed to PID. Rectal infections generally present with anal discharge and itching, plus occasional painful bowel movements with fecal blood spotting. Infection of the throat, for which oral sex is the introducing factor, usually results in mild symptoms consisting of painful or difficult swallowing, sore throat, swollen lymph glands, and fever. Headache and nasal congestion may also be present. If the infection is not treated, the bacterium may enter the bloodstream and spread to other parts of the body, including the brain. Vaginal bleeding. Because menstrual bleeding is a monthly occurrence in most females, vaginal bleeding that is the result of other causes may be initially overlooked. Some possible causes of vaginal bleeding include abnormal menstruation, vaginal trauma, ectopic pregnancy, spontaneous abortion, miscarriage, cervical polyps, and even cancer. Trauma to the internal female genitalia from any cause other than vaginal penetration is rare because of the location of these organs deep within the pelvis. Injuries to the vagina and external genitalia are very painful and serious because of the large quantity of nerves and blood vessels in this area. In contrast, internal bleeding from polyps or cancer, while also very serious, may be relatively painless. Ectopic pregnancy and spontaneous abortion are two conditions that can cause vaginal bleeding in women who do not appear to be pregnant and who may not realize that they are pregnant. These potentially life-threatening conditions will be covered in Chapter 31, Obstetrics and Neonatal Care. All cases of vaginal bleeding should be taken seriously, and the patient should be transported to the hospital for a thorough gynecologic evaluation. Patient assessment. Obtaining an accurate and detailed patient assessment is critical when dealing with gynecologic issues. You may not be able to make a specific diagnosis in the field, but a thorough patient assessment will help determine just how sick the patient is and whether life-saving measures should be initiated. This is especially true when dealing with abdominal pain. Women have many of the same conditions that cause abdominal pain in men, for example, ulcers and appendicitis. In addition, there are numerous gynecologic causes of abdominal pain. An old medical axiom states, anyone who neglects to consider a gynecologic cause in a woman of childbearing age who complains of abdominal pain will miss the diagnosis at least 50% of the time. Missing the diagnosis may be fatal for the patient. Scene size up. Scene safety. Every emergency call, including calls involving gynecologic emergencies, begins with a thorough scene size up. Is the scene safe? Will you need assistance? How many patients do you have? What is the nature of illness, NOI? Have you taken standard precautions? Gynecologic emergencies can be very messy, sometimes involving large amounts of blood and body fluids contaminated with organisms that cause communicable diseases. Where or in what position is the patient found? Is she at home? What is the condition of the residence? Is it clean, filthy, or wrecked? Do you see evidence of a fight? Are alcohol, tobacco products, or drug paraphernalia present? Are there pictures of loved ones, or conversely, a noticeable absence of pictures? Does the patient live alone or with other people? All information you obtain will contribute to your assessment of the patient's overall health and the safety of the scene. In the case of a crime scene, you also may be required to testify in court regarding the conditions on your arrival. Involve the police if any type of assault is suspected. In cases of sexual assault, it is important to have a female EMT to provide patient care, so consider calling for one early if you and your partner are both male. Mechanism of injury, nature of illness. Often the NOI or mechanism of injury in patients with gynecologic problems will be understood from the dispatch information, such as in cases of sexual assault. In other patients, the exact nature of the condition will not emerge until patient history information has been gathered. For example, your patient may present with vague symptoms such as abdominal pain, and you will not be able to determine the exact nature of the problem until you have gathered more information during the patient history. Primary assessment. Form a general impression. The general impression is an important aspect of patient assessment. As you approach the patient, you should be able to tell if she is generally in stable or unstable condition by performing a rapid scan. You will use this information to help you as you proceed with your further assessment. Use the AVPU, alert to person, place, and day, responsive to verbal stimuli, responsive to pain, unresponsive scale, to determine the patient's level of consciousness. Airway and breathing. Always evaluate the airway and breathing immediately to ensure that they are adequate, and treat any airway or breathing problem that is identified according to established guidelines and local protocol. Identifying and treating life threats takes precedence over all other assessment and treatment. Circulation. It is important to carefully assess the circulation in all patients. Palpating a pulse and evaluating skin color, temperature, and moisture can help identify the patient who might have blood loss. If the patient has experienced a significant blood loss because of vaginal bleeding, she may not be demonstrating obvious signs of shock, but may still be hypovolemic. If the patient has a weak or rapid pulse or has pale, cool, or diaphoretic skin, place the patient in a supine position with her legs elevated. Cover the patient to keep her warm, and then provide transport to the emergency department for treatment. Transport decision. Most cases of gynecologic emergencies are not life-threatening. However, if signs of shock exist because of bleeding, then rapid transport is warranted. The remainder of the assessment can be performed en route to the hospital. History taking. Investigate chief complaint. Begin by inquiring about the patient's chief complaint, realizing that some of the questions you must ask may be considered extremely personal. Be sensitive to the patient's feelings and ensure that her privacy and dignity are protected. Gynecologic emergencies can be highly embarrassing for the patient, and many women may be extremely uncomfortable about discussing their sexual history in front of strangers or even close family members. An adolescent girl may want to keep her sexual history from her parents. Sample history. Obtain a sample history, beginning with her current symptoms. Make note of any allergies she has or any medications she might be taking, such as birth control pills, and any birth control devices she is using. Ask the patient about medical conditions and ask specifically about her last menstrual period. This will help determine if the patient is possibly pregnant. Make sure to inquire about the possibility of sexually transmitted diseases and the possibility of pregnancy. Find out when she last ate or drank and what events led up to her calling for EMS. Use her NOI, her chief complaint, and her answers to your other questions to lead your further questioning. For example, if she answers that she is sexually active, ask her about birth control and also about symptoms of pregnancy. If she has vaginal bleeding, determine how many pads she is using per hour. This information can help in creating an estimate of how much blood has been lost. Secondary assessment. The secondary assessment may be performed on scene, en route to the emergency department, or in some instances, not at all. If the patient is critically ill or injured, or the transport time is short, you may not have time to conduct this part of the patient assessment process. Physical examinations. Your physical examination of a gynecologic patient should be limited and professional. Be sure to protect the woman's privacy during the physical examination. Few women are comfortable with having their body exposed to a crowd of family, neighbors, EMTs, police officers, or firefighters. Limit the personnel present to those required to perform the necessary tasks and show the patient you respect her by being an advocate for her modesty. You also serve as a role model for other EMS providers when you act this way. Focus your physical examination on the NOI and the patient's chief complaint. If vaginal bleeding is the NOI, you should visualize the bleeding and ask about its quality and quantity. Make sure to use external pads to control the bleeding and keep the possibility of hypoperfusion or shock in mind. Always ask if there is pain associated with the vaginal bleeding or discharge. You should never insert anything into the vagina to control bleeding, including a tampon. Vaginal discharge is another condition that should be observed if possible. Make observations about the discharge and verify with the patient any qualities she noticed and the history of the discharge. Fever, nausea, and vomiting are common with many medical conditions, but should be considered especially significant with gynecologic emergencies. Any report of syncope on the part of the patient, especially if she is complaining of vaginal bleeding, is considered significant. Treat the patient reporting this symptom as being in shock until proven otherwise. Vital signs. Assess the patient's vital signs, including heart rate, rhythm, and quality, respiratory rate, rhythm, and quality, skin color, temperature, and condition, capillary refill time, and blood pressure. Pay special attention to the presence of tachycardia and hypotension, which could indicate hemorrhage. Monitoring devices. Use the appropriate monitoring devices to track the patient's condition. Use of pulse oximetry should be routine even if the patient is showing no signs of difficult breathing. Also consider using non-invasive blood pressure monitoring to continuously track the patient's blood pressure. It is recommended that you always assess the patient's first blood pressure manually with a sphygmomanometer, blood pressure cuff, and stethoscope. Reassessment. Repeat the primary assessment. Reassess the patient's vital signs and the chief complaint. Reassessment of the patient's vital signs every 5 minutes may identify hyperperfusion from excessive blood loss. If the patient shows signs of shock, intervene with treatment. How is the patient's condition improving with the interventions? Identify and treat any changes in the patient's condition. For example, if the patient appears to be losing consciousness, position her in the supine position and perform a reassessment. Finally, pay specific attention to the needs of your patient and accommodate her desire for conversation or silence. Provide her with calm reassurance. Explain to her that the hospital staff will be sympathetic to her condition and will be well qualified to treat her condition. Interventions. There are very few interventions that can or should be done for a patient with a gynecologic emergency. If the patient has vaginal bleeding, she should be treated for hypoperfusion or shock. Keep her warm, place her in a supine position with her legs elevated, and provide her with supplemental oxygen, even if she is not experiencing difficulty breathing. Then transport her promptly to the hospital. Communication and documentation. Be sure to notify staff at the receiving hospital of all relevant information, including the possibility of pregnancy, so that a proper response can be prepared. Carefully document the patient's condition, her chief complaint, the scene, and all interventions, especially in cases of sexual assault. Emergency medical care. Whenever you deal with patients who have gynecologic problems, you must be sure to maintain the patient's privacy as much as possible. If the patient is in a public place, consider moving the patient to the ambulance. Make sure you communicate appropriately and gain the patient's confidence. Excessive internal vaginal bleeding can have many causes and can possibly lead to hyperperfusion or shock. Determining the cause of the bleeding should be of less importance than treating for shock and transporting the patient to an appropriate facility. Control any internal vaginal bleeding with the use of sanitary pads on the external genitalia. Most women will use sanitary pads to control the bleeding before you arrive, so you may continue that approach. However, if the woman has a tampon in place, it is not necessary to have her remove it. Vaginal bleeding is rarely significant enough to cause hemorrhagic shock, but the patient should be treated for shock nevertheless. Apply oxygen, keep the patient warm, and transport promptly to the hospital. The external genitals have a rich nerve supply, making injuries very painful. Treat any external lacerations, abrasions, and tears with moist, sterile compresses, using local pressure to control bleeding, and a diaper-type bandage to hold the dressings in place. Leave any foreign bodies in place after stabilizing them with bandages. Under no circumstances should you pack or place dressings in the vagina. Continue to assess the patients while transporting them to the emergency department. Contusions and other blunt trauma will require careful in-hospital evaluation. Assessment and management of specific conditions. Pelvic inflammatory disease. A patient with PID will complain of abdominal pain. The pain generally starts during or after a normal menstruation, so inquiring about the date of the patient's last menstrual period is an important component of the patient's history. The pain may be described as achy and may be made worse by walking. Other symptoms may include vaginal discharge, fever and chills, and pain or burning on urination. Patients often present with a distinctive gait when they walk, which is sometimes called the PID shuffle. Pre-hospital treatment is limited, and non-emergency transport is usually recommended. As stated earlier, PID itself is seldom a threat to life, but it is serious enough to require transport and evaluation in the hospital. Sexual assault. Unfortunately, sexual assault and rape are all too common occurrences. In the United States, one of every three women will be raped in her lifetime, and one of every four will be sexually molested, often before the age of 12 years. EMTs called on to treat a victim of sexual assault, molestation, or actual or alleged rape face many complex issues, ranging from obvious medical ones to serious psychological and legal issues. You may be the first person the victim has contact with after the encounter, and how the situation is managed from first contact throughout treatment and transport may have lasting effects for the patient and you. Professionalism, tact, kindness, and sensitivity are of paramount importance. Because rape is a crime, you can generally expect police involvement early in the situation. In many cases, EMS may be called by the police. Police officers generally have rudimentary medical training, with many states requiring at least basic training at the first responder, emergency medical responder, level. Nevertheless, primary training for police officers focuses on investigation of the crime, not patient care. A rape victim has just experienced a major trauma of her body and mind. The last thing a victim wants to do is give a concise, detailed report of what she has just experienced, and attempting to gather patient information in this manner will most likely cause the victim to shut down. Whenever possible, a female rape victim should be given the option of being treated by a female EMT, because the patient may be experiencing ambivalent feelings toward men. These feelings will hinder the patient assessment and the patient's well-being. The job of the police is to solve the crime, arrest the perpetrator, and see justice served. Your job, as the EMT, is to deal with the medical aspects of the case and to act as the patient advocate. In this capacity, it is important for you to focus on several key issues. The first issue is the medical treatment of the patient. Is she physically injured? Are any life-threatening injuries present? Does the patient complain of any pain? The second issue is your psychological care of the patient. Do not cross-examine her or attempt to obtain information for the benefit of the police. These issues will be handled later by the hospital staff and police. Do not pass judgment on the patient and protect her from the judgment of others on the scene. A crime has been committed, and you need to remain aware of that fact. Many women report feeling violated when subjected to interrogation, criticism, or disbelief. Last, remember that you are at a crime scene. Although your job is to treat the medical aspects of the incident and not collect evidence, you still have a responsibility to preserve evidence. Do not cut through any clothing or throw away anything from the scene. Place blood-stained articles in separate paper, not plastic, bags. Obtain evidentiary bags from the police if necessary. Paper bags allow wet items to dry naturally, whereas plastic allows mold to grow and may destroy biologic evidence. It may also be necessary to gently persuade the patient to not clean herself. Victims tend to want to wash away the humiliation and embarrassment of the assault. Valuable evidence can be destroyed in this process. The patient also needs to be discouraged from urinating, changing clothes, moving her bowels, or rinsing out her mouth. She will need to be photographed by law enforcement personnel as well, and the photographic record needs to be as accurate as possible. If the patient cannot be dissuaded from taking these actions, respect her feelings. Some patients may refuse transport altogether, and they have the right to do so. In such cases, you should follow your system's refusal of treatment policy or procedure for sexual assault victims without judging or being condescending to the patient. Your compassion is the best tool to gain the patient's confidence to get further help. Offer to call the local rape crisis center for the patient. Many communities have rape crisis centers with victim advocates on call. Getting a professional advocate to the scene may help the patient deal with the trauma, and the advocate can better explain the necessities of evidence preservation in more compassionate detail. Many victim advocates are rape trauma survivors themselves. They can also provide support to the patient in the hospital during any additional physical examinations. Take the patient's history and limit any physical examination to a brief survey for life-threatening injuries. Treat all other injuries, such as contusions or lacerations, according to appropriate procedures and protocols for your EMS system. Follow standard precautions. Expose and examine the vaginal area only if there is evidence of bleeding that needs to be treated. Take care to shield the patient from any possible curious onlookers. Examine and interview the patient with a minimum of people present, moving her to the ambulance if necessary. The patient report is a legal document and, should the case result in an arrest and subsequent trial, may be subpoenaed. Keep the report concise and record only what the patient stated in her own words. Use quotation marks to indicate that you are reporting the patient's version of events. Do not insert your own opinion as to whether the patient was raped or offer any conclusions that would validate or invalidate the patient's account of the event. Focus on the facts. Record all your observations during the physical exam, the patient's emotional state, the condition of her clothing, obvious injuries, and so forth. Bear in mind that rape is a legal diagnosis, not a medical diagnosis. The medical team can establish only whether sexual intercourse occurred. A court must decide whether intercourse was inflicted forcibly on the victim against her will. Table 21.1 lists the treatment principles you should use when dealing with a victim of sexual assault. Often the most important intervention for sexual assault patients is comforting reassurance and transport to a facility that has employees who are certified to perform the proper physical examination in this type of case. Reminding the patient that she is safe with you and that the hospital staff and police will take good care of her may help to reassure her. Sometimes just the presence of a female EMT can be emotionally helpful. Do not insist that she talk to you, but listen carefully and non-judgmentally if she does want to talk. Remember that victims of sexual assault also need medical assistance. Therefore, treat the medical injuries, but also remember to ensure the patient's privacy and provide her emotional support.